This is WBLY Presents. I'm Sean Beter. On Wednesday, October 29th, WBLY listeners packed the house at the Phoenix in downtown Fort Wayne for our third iteration of Issues and Ales. Today, we bring you the second hour of that event, a discussion on the arts community in northeastern Indiana. On stage for this live discussion are Dan Swartz from Wunderkammer Company, Jennifer Ford from Choice Designs, and Charles Shepard from the Fort Wayne Museum of Art. WBLY's Virginia Alvino moderated the event, and she takes it from here.
So to get started, I'd like to ask each of you, just from your vantage point, can we get a little lay of the land? What is the arts community in Fort Wayne? Who does it consist of, and where is it? Let's start with Dan.
Okay. The arts community traditionally would be anybody who's producing some sort of cultural good or performance. So everything from visual art to music, theater, dance. We're actually doing a project called Creative Census right now that kind of addresses this issue, which is that art production goes far outside of an object or an experience, and it encompasses things like design that you're interacting with on an everyday basis, but you might not realize it. So it's everything from architecture to web development, things like that. So as far as what is the arts community, it's a lot larger than what people think or even interact with, I would say.
And Jennifer, anything that we're missing?
Actually, you asked specifically about the arts community in Fort Wayne. I am on a daily basis impressed with the talent that we do have here. I think, if I had a personal project, it would be consolidating that arts community and trying to figure out how it works, how we can support each other, and how we can be more available to the general public.
And Charles, maybe a little spin on that. Are there any sort of trends that we're seeing in the arts community right here in Fort Wayne?
Well, I think, maybe a trend to think about isn't exactly within the arts community. It's a trend that I've noticed that's been growing over the last 6 years in particular for the community to get into the art community. And I don't mean just attend things, but to participate, to support, to engage both ways, two sides of the street. And I think that works out very well here. So that if that's a trend, that's a good trend.
And, maybe now we're looking forward. Let's look back a little bit. Has it always been this way? What has gotten us to this point where there do seem to be quite a few people involved? Dan, you're shaking your head.
The internet. I would say probably the onset of the internet is a lot of where the participatory nature of what we consider art and culture came from, because now you have, one, you have to actively engage people in a lot different way, or in a very different way that you used to, because you can kind of just sit at home on Netflix all day long if you wanted to. and then also it gives a way for the audience to respond. So any project that you do is usually readily available on the internet, and people from the leisure of their homes while they're watching Netflix can be critiquing or participating in a project.
Well, if I could expand on what Dan just said, think about this. The first art groups that really exploited what the internet could do for people were bands. You can't get a label, you can't get anybody to listen to your music, but you could take it on your own through YouTube and a variety of other mechanisms, and people could get to your music and vote to like it and buy it from you. Now, the visual artists were a little slower. I think visual artists were quick to look for websites, but it dawned on artists watching bands that, in fact, if you could capture that same kind of mechanism, then, in fact, maybe you don't have to wait to be discovered by a museum or gallery. You're going to be discovered by people, and I think that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, I agree with you, Charles. I was talking to somebody just today. It used to be, even 10 years ago, that if you didn't live in New York, you weren't an important artist. Now, artists can be discovered where they are, and I think Fort Wayne will realize that and we will be able to embrace and retain the creative talent that we have here in the community, because they don't need to live in New York to, you know, talk to the galleries that are really important. You know, that can all happen via Skype, on the internet. We have high-res digital, images. So I think people are going to stay in place a lot more, and we'll be ready for it.
I mean, just to go back a little bit, it feels like we're still kind of talking about these very traditional producers of art that have this direct product that you can then sell or market or you know, book at a venue. Who else are we talking about? You've talked about it just a little bit, Dan, but can you go into detail about who is this creative economy and what makes it an economy, which means, you know, interacting within itself?
Well, going kind of back into that, though,
sure.
It's really the internet changed distribution from like an economic term, kind of,
sure.
for the art world, where it's not place-based in the same way that it used to be, but it's also just changed, it's changed the way that people think about it, and it's also highlighted the fact that the arts economy, and or creative economy, which is usually how people term it, it's always been based on a credibility that's mostly... mediated through relationships. So now that you can have a relationship more readily with somebody who's a continent away without having to fly there or be there physically, it's allowed that to just flourish. Kind of going back into your last question, though. I would say there's a lot of great artists for a long time, really going back into, like, if you really want to get art historical about it, going back into like Dada, or in a U.S. terms, like Black Mountain College kind of era of participatory work that's not really made by one person as much as it's made by a group of people. Well, the internet essentially expanded that, like, to an extreme degree, in that you could literally have millions of people participating on a project. One thing that a former intern has kind of turned me on to right now is a website called Dis. It's very niche, I would say. And it's a group of artists that are primarily working with the internet as their medium for art, which is a big change, where you no longer really have a physical good that you're transferring from hands to hands or kind of even an experience, because you're experiencing it through the internet, which is not kind of comparable to our normal experiences with art. Dis magazine that they've actually been chosen to curate the Whitney Biennial recently, which is a very big honor in the art world. So it's kind of gaining credibility in a whole new way.
And Jennifer, I mean, is there anything that we missed in terms of what is included in this very broad arts economy? We've talked a little bit about local artists. I know that includes freelance artists as well, as people that are working full-time. But you work as an art consultant. Is there a part of this arts economy that we're missing?
I think locally it can be very strong. And, you know, as working in the interior design field, we're looking for creatives who are florists. We're looking for creatives in event spaces, people who can put together a music venue in a very brief way or create an entire event out of it. So I think Fort Wayne is a very open-minded community when it comes to supporting the arts. I think we need to take that one step further and make the arts a community, in and of itself as well.
Well, that's really interesting, because we have Charles Shepard here, again, the sort of arts, the institution, the traditional institution. And have you found all these things that we're talking about in terms of this community is open-minded and willing to work together and collaborate? Have you found that from your viewpoint as well, coming in from a more traditional space?
Oh, I think it's definitely true about this community. I was told this when I first came here 11 years ago, that if you want to get involved in this community, you can get involved in any kind of project you want to, and I think that's very true. And so on the one hand, that openness makes everything easier to do. I would say that it's made the things that we've done at the museum much, much easier to do. But also, think about 11 years ago, a lot of the galleries around were struggling and closing up. And at one point in time, maybe my second or third year, trolley tour almost didn't happen because there were only like three galleries who are actually making it. That's not true today. I think we've had some natural attrition in some respects, but I think we've also had some real smart, hardworking people open new galleries, Crestwood, a variety of other places in town, Dan opening his great space. So the community support has helped him do that, and it helps us do it too. I mean, our visitorship is up another 30,000 people a year, which is good. And I'm going to backtrack for one second, though, because here's a group of artists that the internet also opened the world to. Two groups, really. One, if you're a regional / local artist, you know, the best way for you to enter New York's art world is to get online and start talking to people, calling people up, sending them stuff, and making your site lively or whatever it is you're doing. That's thing number one. Number two, though, other people that are doing that, like the museum, is putting a lot of emphasis, we all always have since I got here, on having local and regional artists. But I'm looking for local and regional artists, too, in other localities and other regions. So here you have tattoo artists, Dennis McNett, known better as Wolfbat. Now, Dennis starts doing screen prints and woodcuts. He's coming here to build a Viking ship in the galleries. Now, where did I find him? I find him at a blog, you know. Michael July's Afro Show, where I find Michael? You know, I find him at Kickstarter while he's trying to make a book. So you can access these people. The thing you have to do, though, is you really just have to be out and about looking, you know, in our side of the business anyway.
Go ahead, Dan.
I will challenge the openness of the community in a little bit. One thing I should say is I'm very happy with the community that we found at Zundercommer, and I think that it is an exceptionally open group of people. But I would say as the community as a whole, most of the people that we're working with at that gallery space are essentially feeling othered and that they don't have many avenues for operating in whatever, if it's their artistic practice or just their ideas, like just kind of who they are. And I think that that's a really big issue. That's something that we've tried to tackle, is just connecting people together so it is more of a community, because I feel like as a whole, the community in Fort Wayne is much more... I'm trying to choose my words correctly.
It's going to get interesting.
This is public radio.
It's much less open-minded about new ideas that are truly new. Because of our access to the internet, people here in this room can be just as on point about something happening internationally as anyone else. But the community's acceptance of those ideas is something that has not followed suit.
So this is going to make me jump around a bunch, but it sounds like you're making a very chicken rather than egg claim about our community. These are people that already exist and are looking for a place to go, as opposed to your space cultivating this set of ideas or priorities. And so what do you think, it's either or both?
No, I do think it's both. We also have worked with a lot of artists who have worked within the community for decades. And in that respect, I'm always trying to kind of push people out of comfort zones, or what we always refer to as is making people feel comfortable with being uncomfortable, which is something that I don't know if the community at large is always about.
Yeah, I think what would make the biggest difference in Fort Wayne is if the arts community was in close proximity to each other. So, if we had a cultural arts district, and Charles is part of a wonderful arts campus, Arts United is there, which is really amazing from an institutional perspective. But what we need are creative entrepreneurs to be able to walk next door and say, man, you know, I'm not sure if I'm getting the right insurance coverage. What did you get? Or, you know, how does your rent compare to mine? What should I do? You know, creative entrepreneurs are wonderful in, you know, their artistic practice, but I think if we were able to gather around a few practical business models as well and support each other in that way, it would flourish in a whole new way.
So I know that this is part of... Did you have a comment, Charles?
Well, I want to go back to Dan for a minute.
Sure.
Dan, I have to challenge you because it's fun.
Yeah.
Okay, I've directed museums in University of Michigan, Ohio University, University of Maine, Connecticut College here, and comparing those communities and their openness, those communities weren't any more open than Fort Wayne. And I'll tell you, in 30 years, I would tell you most of those communities were less open than Fort Wayne. Now, is Fort Wayne open to everything? That's where I agree with Dan. You know, no, maybe not. My point in this being, if you think about the 20th century, the artists of the 20th century, particularly the first 50 years, ruined the relationship between art and the average person because you had to be wicked cool to get it. You see what I'm saying? So right off the bat, we're struggling at the end of the 20th century, you know, past World War II, truly, we're struggling to say, you know what, it's okay to be a normal, middle-class, ordinary human being. You don't have to be a beret-wearing, you know, liberal to come to my place. The arts, we fought ourselves because we wanted to be so damn different from everybody else. That's a problem. That's a problem we're still dealing with, and it's sometimes why people reject what we do. I still have people say to me, you know why I'm not going to support this? Because I actually go to work every day for my job, and this guy sits painting an easel, doing what he wants to do all day. Not Dan, of course, but, you know, so
I forgot my beret tonight. I'm sorry, everyone.
Okay. I'm done.
One thing with openness, I feel like a potential difference with some of those communities that you have had experience with is their size and their competitiveness with other communities. Fort Wayne positions itself as being, I mean, one, we're the second largest city in the state, but we're also kind of a mid-sized city when it really comes to where we are in a national scene. Well, if we want to be the best mid-sized city, we're not really doing that good of a job of it, to be honest. Like, if you look at anything that our economic development organizations are talking about, there's a lot of other cities that are kind of that are out-competing us. That's better than what I was about to say. I think that openness is really one of those things. And by openness, I think we have to kind of define that a little bit as just allowing new things to happen, both things that you are comfortable with and things that you are uncomfortable with. If you're open to really great things that you agree with, that's not really being open. You have to be open to kind of not knowing what's going on and follow somebody and have trust in somebody. And I feel like that's something that as a community and specifically within the arts community that we kind of lack. If you look at things like the Knight Foundation Soul Poll, it found that openness was one of the main factors in people wanting to stay in their city, something that makes it attractive to people who already live there. And that was also one of the issues that we needed to work on from that stuff.
Well, that's getting sort of the cultural and maybe economic case as well with retaining talent. Just to back up a little bit, can we talk about why we should care about a thriving arts community? Is it good for the economy as well?
Absolutely. I mean, we are now moving from a country of manufacturers to a country of creative entrepreneurs. And how do we attract that kind of talent and how do we retain that kind of talent? It is by creating a very diverse atmosphere. And again, exactly what Dan was talking about, an open atmosphere. That way, people who have, you know, different ideas feel free to express them. So art isn't just, you know, a fantastic economic boost to a city. It is, it's an overall atmosphere that will attract talent and other people.
But what about for the artists themselves? Dan, I know you talk about some sort of, you know, unusual suspects when we talk about folks in the creative economy, and they're not all just building a product that they then sell and they benefit themselves in an economic way. You know, what is that creative economy and how is it beneficial for this sort of local regional economy at large?
Well, I mean, if you look at very strictly and looking at our region, some of the creative businesses that, or what would be defined as creative industries that are businesses around that people would probably feel familiar with would be like Sweetwater, Vera Bradley, Matilda Jane. Those are just three that are very kind of buzzworthy right now. But those are all based on an idea, really. It becomes translated into a product, but it's really a... an idea that they're pushing. So it's the knowledge about musical instruments. It's the kind of attractiveness of a bag design. It's not just the most utilitarian purse ever created, and that's really what it is. It's that soft kind of value that's there.
Charles, what about from a sort of institutional perspective?
Well, I think the word amenities means something to everybody. If I'm asked to move from Boston to here to do a job, or you know, maybe it's me wondering, maybe it's my spouse, but you want to know what amenities are where, whether you're going to use them or not. You know, I love to see a great park system with trails. Do I use them? No, but I want them there. I might want to use them someday. People want to know there's an art museum and a Philharmonic, whether they like classical music or whether they even want to come see the art museum. So I don't worry about that, but it is going to be part of their package. So that's a factor. Second thing quickly is just that everybody forgets what kind of spending the arts attract. People that come to do art things spend money eating and drinking. They have room taxes, because they rent rooms. The organizations themselves spend money. I mean, I think we spend $2 million locally a year, and we invest another $10 million in banks here, and the collection is worth probably $20 million. So that's a lot of money that we're pushing around the community.
Jen, do you have any idea of sort of like the return on an investment that we could potentially yield by investing in our arts community?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, and one thing just to kind of build on what Charles was talking about as far as amenities are concerned, you know, Fort Wayne really prides itself on being so, you know, kid-friendly. I have an 8-year-old son, and there aren't a whole lot of places I can take him after 5 o'clock. And there aren't a whole lot of places I can take him after 5 o'clock that have a wonderful artistic base to them. So a fantastic rock band, because that's what he's into, or, a creative arts program after that time, after he gets out of school. You know, these are sorts of things that I think the entire Fort Wayne community would get around if we had extended hours in these things, if we had a center for them, and if we knew that we could go with a lot of people and there were larger venues. So, you know, the creative arts economy doesn't just happen for people who want to come here and be, you know, art tourists. These are for people inside of our community already that are out in the suburbs who might want to come into the, you know, into the city or into an art place that's dedicated for that.
Sure. Dan?
As far as a return on investment, yeah. I mean, that's specifically in those companies that I mentioned. That's about 1,000 employees who are living here, having a family here, getting a house here, whatever taxes they're producing for the state, that we get some incremental amount back into our community. That's the return on investment. The long term is what I think people really need to look at, which of course nobody wants to look at really, which is making a space more viable over a period of time. That's where a collection is something that's so valuable that I don't think communities really understand. Right now, it's really interesting if you look at what's happening in Detroit. It's a city that went bankrupt, and literally people were kind of screaming in the streets for their museum to kind of offload their collections so that they could pay off bills, when that collection was the thing that attracted people to the city, and it's the distinctiveness that allows you to have an identity as a city. I think that's where the return on investment for the arts economy always is the building of an identity and the ability to self-reflect on what are your issues and what do you think about yourself.
Well, do you think fundamentally, all of you, really, that that's something that's going to be a challenge for this community, that maybe that there's something inherent to these communities that sees art as a nicety? They're seeing it as something, in that case, expendable. But, I mean, that was obviously in an extreme circumstance when they needed to compensate for something else. But do you think that there's still that idea of this otherness? I'm in this community, and then there's this art, and it's nice that it's there. But I don't need it to thrive, maybe.
Yes, that's a problem.
Yeah, and literally, we can't afford to think of art like that anymore as a city. Exactly what Dan was talking about. You know, art is creating fantastic identities in much smaller communities than ours. There are arts festivals, there are arts communities, there are live workspaces, and it doesn't only affect, let's say, traditional economy, but also higher education and education as a whole. We have a fantastic representative of colleges and universities in this city, and if we had a place for them to go afterwards, if they were in an arts or liberal arts related field, you know, I think the growth would be really incredible. And that's something that Dan is studying with the Creative Census as well, is, you know, where did these people graduate? What did they graduate with? Are they doing this on a part-time basis? And, you know, how can we help them? How can we support this here?
12% of our population is between the ages of 18 and 34. That is unsustainable. That is happening because they are attracted to places that are more competitive in giving them things that they can identify with. If you're not giving a population something that they can feel good about, and that's really not a scientific term, but you know what I mean, something, a place where you can feel like you are yourself. That's really what
that makes me curious, Charles. Is what is your interaction with that, you know, millennial age?
I think we draw a healthy percentage of that demographic into the museum, but let's come at the situation a little bit differently. I look at the city population, the metropolitan district, if you will. So that's a little broader, okay? I look at that, and according to two studies that we funded, one 7 years ago and one 3 years ago. We actually pull from the existing audience that we have, we pull a higher percentage than 12 of our comparables across the country. So I can't feel that's bad at all. I think that's, you know, actually pretty, I'm more satisfied in that sense. And my growth continues. So that's not bad. And at the same time, you know, we're involved, we have partners in Finland now, we have partners in London now, and we're starting to take the Fort Wayne Museum of Art things overseas and across the country, and that's bringing stuff back to this country. It's bringing this last 6 months, we've had two national magazines feature us, one in an 8-page spread. That helps us even locally, though, because somebody will pick up that magazine and think, hey, I never respected them until somebody outside of town did. That's the old consultant, you know, dilemma.
The growth of our institutions is definitely something that can be seen as a positive about our community, but I think that a strong arts economy has to be outside of an institutional model. Not to plug it too often, but that's why we're doing Creative Census, is that it looks at the creative employee or like the base unit of an economy, not the organization or institution, because ultimately an institution is going to think about its preservation, where an individual is going to have to eat. It has to pay its taxes. It has to, et cetera. Where the museum could literally be 10 times its size and it still might not produce that pull to bring the individuals into the city that we would need to continue to thrive as far as an overall creative economy would go.
So we're talking about these individuals. Is it that sort of age-old, you know, the starving artist? Are they here? Is the talent here? And the resources and opportunities just are not? Or is it the other way around?
So I don't know how to not offend people, but Fort Wayne needs to step it up as far as the individual artistic talent. There's a lot of talent that's here, but a lot of that talent is really shy about it. The number of times that I have to literally coax people out of their basement studio so that they'll do a show at my space is ridiculous. And then also, I just don't think that we have a very competitive art market to where a lot of the people who are showing I'm talking primarily from a visual standpoint, but I would argue that it goes throughout the entire creative economy. There's just not a lot of competition, so you don't have to be the best. You just have to be better than the people that are nearby.
So you'd say it is if you build it, they will come situation?
Yes.
Maybe. If you beg them, they will exhibit?
If you beg and beg and promise.
Well, you know... to take off on one of Dan's points, you know, competitiveness in the visual arts scene is important wherever you are if you want a healthy scene, but a structural flaw we have is we don't have graduate programs, larger graduate programs in the visual arts. And so what that's going to mean is to have a graduate program, you're going to have more professors of art. They're going to be a little bit higher up the food chain to be teaching graduate students. Those graduate students are going to flock. They're going to put pressure on the people who are undergraduates to do better work because the graduate students are doing better work. And those undergraduates put pressure on the school programs to get better. That structure's not here. Now, I'd love if it was, but I think we have to do what we can to work with what we have and make it real, you know?
I completely agree with that.
Yeah, and I'm on both sides of this argument because I'm getting my PhD outside of Fort Wayne in the arts, and I teach the arts here in Fort Wayne on a very part-time basis because that is the only thing that's available. So I'm on that aspect of it, you know, creating the talent and retaining the talent, but I'm also the end user of that talent. I want to be able to put Fort Wayne artists in Fort Wayne homes. And right now, that's a really difficult process. I have to, and I don't mind traveling to different studios to look at artwork, but when they don't know how to price their work, how to write an invoice, how to take a credit card, for my clients especially, it becomes very, very difficult. You know, there are, you know, very practical considerations that they have to understand and know to be able to be in the marketplace. And, you know, that's not selling out. That's just, you know, getting existing their artwork to a wider audience.
Certainly.
If I can, to sure. Jennifer's point, I think she's right on point. But let's look at another structural thing that's outside of Fort Wayne. It's the country. When you think about the number of art programs that opened at universities after World War II, when the GI Bill came in, the whole methodology of training artists changed. Now you're going to train for 4 years. You're also going to take other classes. But that's not the point. Not the trail I want to go down. The trail I want to go down is that all of a sudden, rather than having a few hundred new artists every year, you had thousands of new artists every year. More schools formed, more training formed, and today thousands upon thousands more artists are minted from university programs. And that body of artists is going to be as strong as it can be. Survival of the fittest. Some are going to do well. Some are going to flounder. The ones that can't figure out these things that Jennifer points out, and you're right, they're not going to be doing well at this.
Oh, guys, this hour is just flying by. We're going to get to some questions right about now. And remember, if you're tweeting, we're at WBOI, hashtag WBOI Ales. And if you've not yet submitted your questions, please do, because if we do not get to them right away, we certainly take a good look at them, and they may inform some of our future arts coverage. So we still would love to hear your input on the conversation. Here's a question from Stephanie Fisher of the Fort Wayne Ballet. How can the Fort Wayne arts community draw in or attract community members who can't afford a membership to the art museum or a ticket to the ballet?
Okay, I just have to say, I don't know of anybody who couldn't make a conscious choice to make that payment to any of the arts and skip another payment. The people that tell me that they can't come to the museum are buying Guinness, and they're spending the money on that. You know, everything's a choice. Everything's a choice. So if you're going to want to do it, it's not about the money. It's about making your decision right. Whether it be going to Science Central, or going to our place, going to the ballet, wherever it is.
But it may not be the cost. It may just be the perception of that cost. You just cited hearing from maybe working class folks who didn't think the arts was for them.
Well, you know, years ago that bothered me. It doesn't bother me at all anymore. I'm not going to tell you the arts for everybody. That's your choice to make. I think you'd be happier if you had the arts in your life. But if you don't believe that, you know, That's just fine.
I believe Dan and Jennifer probably have some words about that.
we live in an interdisciplinary world. I mean, there is art and music everywhere we go. That's why, you know, public arts programs are so strong in other communities. you know, you like Charles was saying, you have a choice. You can go see free art in our community. It's there. It's a little bit harder to find here, but I think if we had an arts center or an arts district, if we got behind, you know, kind of centralizing it, people would recognize what art looks like outside of that institutional framework, and we would be able to create it in other places.
I'm going to take the role of the radical in here and say do it for free then, and take it to the streets so that people can understand it in their own terms. I don't think that that's a practical model in the long term, but a lot of the problem, I'll say specifically, hopefully without making friends angry, specifically with the kind of the top institutions, which usually carry some sort of identity of being elitist to someone who just wasn't ingrained in the arts. You can do free programming and not break your bank. I do free programming through Wunderkammer, and we have almost no money. So anybody can do that. It's just a choice, it's a very, very conscious choice as to what you think the ideals behind your art are and how valuable that audience is. From a ballet standpoint, I would say look at a lot of the things that the New York Ballet is doing using the internet, which we were bringing up before. They have beautiful, breathtaking performances that are very short and you're not seeing the whole thing, but it's enticing you in. I've never been very attracted to ballet. I've been interested in it, but I've never been, I guess, fully enamored in ballet, and I've watched those YouTube videos like 4,000 times because they're beautiful, and that's a way that you can entice somebody in freely, so that then eventually once they have the education, they are choosing, as Charles totally correctly said, was making that choice to go to a performance.
So on a similar note, do you think the arts community could do a better job of educating or informing the average non-artistic person about art and the value of certain art, why it's important, like a sort of ongoing arts appreciation learning opportunity in town?
Yes.
Do you agree, Charles?
Yeah, I do agree. I've also realized something. I think I'm the kind of like the Blake Shelton up here. I'm not the radical side, but let me tell you, I think that education is key to this. You've got to... You know, it's not anyone's fault that they're not attracted to the art if they haven't, you know, sort of been introduced and coaxed along the way. I mean, most of what I've done in my career, really done it even more here with the help of BOI, is tell the stories. Tell the stories about what happened. People are more interested in the story of the artist who fell down the elevator than his pictures, you know? I mean, but you know what we love to tell people? When they were born and when they died. Nobody really gives a hoot about that. What they want to know is, you know, who do they date? Where did they go? What trouble did they get into?
I take issue with the question just because it assumes an arts community. Like the three of us get up here and talk and decide what the program is for Fort Wayne. That doesn't happen. I'd love it to. You know, if we got together on a weekly basis and a few other people who made a lot of the decisions in the arts community did, that would be really fantastic to have that kind of, you know, communication on a regular basis. But it hasn't happened yet, and it won't until, we make it happen.
Well, there was a question about partnerships within arts organizations that came up, and where on that spectrum would you say the Fort Wayne arts organizations fall as far as being in partnerships?
I would say that there's really great examples of partnerships, and then there's really great examples of the breakdown in partnerships, obviously, just like any community, but I would say as a whole, Fort Wayne's arts organizations have kind of been almost pitted against each other in a lot of ways. That's a really long story to tell, so this format might not be the best way to bring it up, but I would say that overall, the arts in Fort Wayne are kind of segmented. So I've always described it as being visual art, music, theater. There's obviously a lot of different versions of that, but just particularly with my experiences, I have no acting or singing or any of that kind of ability, but I was friends with people who were in those worlds, and I would always go out to an opening and see a certain group of people, and then I would go to a performance and see a completely other group of people. And I don't exactly know why, but that tends to be the way that it goes.
Well, here's a little bit of a take on the partnership idea. This question asks, how involved is the arts community in things like the Riverfront Development Initiative? Do you find that local government's doing a good job in reaching out to the arts community and supporting local artists and showcasing local artists in the local sphere?
Well, if I could take a quick stab at that.
Sure.
You know, when I moved to Ann Arbor to run the Ann Arbor Art Fair, I thought I'd be embraced by the city of Ann Arbor, you know, all the elected officials, because we raised so much money in that four-day period with 500,000 people. Well, indeed, we were disliked, actually. We had to get things done in spite of the city because the city didn't care whether the Ann Arbor Art Fair happened or not. So I offer that as an example. I was involved in a lot of things my first couple of years here, went to meetings weekly about this. But by and large, the city has not yet prioritized what the arts are all about. There's a lot of good lip service, but it has not been prioritized. And frankly, speaking for the museum, we backed off from those kind of involvements because until the energy is coming from the city, I'm not going to spend any of my energy doing anything that isn't good for the museum and the community we serve.
I have to agree with you on the tradition and history of Fort Wayne and their involvement with the arts from a city perspective. I have, and I'm saying only very recently, within the last couple of months, been very encouraged with singular individuals that I've spoken to who have at least told me that they have a heart for the arts, which is wonderful. And now we need to take it to that next step. So I'm more of a doer than a talker. I want to know, so where is this arts community going to take place? What building are we buying to make this happen? When can we open? Who's funding it? I want to talk about and then act on, you know, really specific ways that we can make this happen. So that's kind of my perspective on it.
The really funny thing about this is that there are a lot of, like, closet art fans in our city government, like, literally all over the place, but there isn't a political space for them to admit it to themselves and others. And I used to work for the Downtown Improvement District, so I had to work fairly closely with the city and just kind of everything that entails. One of the really interesting things, like, what Charles brought up, like, in an entity which is basically derived of its regulations, there are no regulations for art. So until there are rules to follow, they will never actually support it in a strong way. On the other hand, it's really interesting because one thing that I don't know if he's in the audience, but one of my friends has told me about, and is public, is part of the legacy funding, which I'm pretty sure everybody's heard about that at least somehow. We've already approved funding for public art, but there's absolutely no transparent process in how that is going to be allocated. And so it's almost like there's no point in doing it if you're going to do it like that too. So.
And just to that point, I've had conversations with people who have brought it up 8 years ago, in fact, to create a cultural arts center. They were told, I don't understand what you're talking about, and I think it's worthless. And so they went to a different city and a different community and created that wonderful multi-million-dollar arts center. We're missing opportunities. And I think unless we are able to not only listen, but figure out how to act collectively, these sorts of things and the economic impact that will, you know, be brought to us will just keep passing us by.
That's really going back to the conversation about openness. It's openness to opportunity. That's what you're missing, and that's the kind of the, it's almost an opposite of return on investment, because it's like the missing out on investment is if you're not open to new ideas, then you're not going to take advantage of them. Solely, there's no question about it, because you're not even letting the conversation start to where an open community would at least talk about it and create a dialogue, and then if ultimately it just doesn't fit, great, keep going and find something else. But if you're just shutting conversations down from the start, then you're never going to get anywhere.
Charles, I'm wondering what your experience has been like trying to develop art in the public sphere, or have you encountered that at all?
Well, you know, Jim Sparrow at Arts United and I worked probably for 7 years on the concept to organize public art in this space. Could we get percent for art money? Could we get some legislation passed for that? If we couldn't do that, is there another way that we could get a fund rolling? And the concept was that in those days, the concept was that Arts United, along with the museum, would sort of provide the infrastructure for that kind of, you know, activity, and that we would populate the city at, you know, let the city decide where the great points are for great art around town, but let that be part of the character of downtown. Now, you know, Jim, as we all know, left. Arts United is doing a great job going forward, and I suspect that topic's going to come back up again at some point in time. At University of Maine, I oversaw a statewide percent for art program to guarantee that the governor wouldn't ever be embarrassed by art that shouldn't have been bought. State of Maine is probably even less open than Dan suggests we are. So if you can do it in State of Maine, you can do it here easily, I'm sure.
I would love to get a little reaction from Dan on that question, as well as take a few more questions. We are at time, but we have permission to go a few minutes longer, if that's all right with all of you. I'm seeing some heads. I'm going to take it as a yes. How about you guys? Is that okay? A few more questions?
Yeah.
Dan, you seemed a little bit skeptical.
So I would say that ultimately, if you want public art to happen, you just have to make it happen. And I hate to be self-aggrandizing about this, but I have wanted public art to happen since I started working for the Downtown Improvement District, which was in 2009, I believe. And so saved up my money, bought a building, told my friends that they could paint on the outside of it. That's how you get public art to happen. It's on a major thoroughfare, so 8,000 people going south, 8,000 people going north have to look at it. That's how you get public art to happen. I don't think that you can wait for institutions to make something happen that you want to see. And I think that the more that the public gets involved in public art, the more that we'll see happening around town. Ultimately, the most that you're going to get out of a public art program, if you can get a percent for art program happening, that's awesome because there's a funding mechanism for it. But essentially, you're going to have to strong arm that money out of a very tight group of developers who have kind of controlled a conversation in Allen County for a long time. So you're not going to get that, basically, and just to be totally real about it. So I think that people have to figure out how to get what they want in other ways.
Yeah, NPR put together a great set of panelists because, we all come from a very different perspective. And I come from the private enterprise perspective. And if I want an arts community to happen, I'm going to have to make it happen. And I'm going to get business loans and I'm going to go through the, you know, business aspects that I understand and know. Charles is wonderful because he understands the institutional side of things and Dan understands the nonprofit side of things. We're going to make it happen, and I think we have a lot of support. We just need to kind of get more people behind it to help us through this because we can't do it by ourselves.
Well, when we talk about just in general growing and sustaining this arts economy, it seems like there's some sort of fractioned talent. There's freelance, whatever they are, photographers, painters, what have you, and that it's going to take maybe this nonprofit grassrootsy effort to bring them all together. I'm wondering, Charles, what do you think the institution, the more formal institution's role is going to be in sort of cultivating and creating that arts community and then arts economy?
Well, I think exactly what Jennifer said is correct. You've got to decide what it is you're going to do. Get your focus, and then you really just have to go do it. And I think the same is true for our institution as it is for the individual groups or the individual Dan who's doing it on his own. Yeah, we launched that renovation campaign, $7.5 million, in the middle of the worst economy we've seen in a long time. But we were successful, so somebody wanted us to do it. And we decided not to wait for the city and not to wait for any other group of people, developers, or whoever you want to demonize at the time. But you know, the point is, we knew what we wanted to do, and we knew what our audiences wanted to see and do. They wanted more galleries, they wanted more space, they wanted a sculpture court, they wanted us to generate some money so that we could buy some public art and you know locate it maybe for a year or so at our place and then move it around the city. You just really have to take action.
Let's talk about the kids. There's a few questions about youth and the arts.
The kids are all right.
So one question we have is, could you address art in the schools? Does lack of art education affect the art economy? We also had a question from Jonathan, who says, as a 42-year resident of Southeast Fort Wayne, I love what Lifetime Sports Academy has done to introduce golf and tennis to low-income children. What are your thoughts on developing something that would introduce the arts to low-income children, and maybe in Southeast Fort Wayne specifically?
I was involved with ArtLink for the last year on their board of directors, and they have a heart for educating arts, education and the arts, and they're doing things like creative Lego classes or drawing classes or summer camp programs, and they're very accessible and they're very affordable. So I think that there are, some, again, institutions who are starting to do that. But I think we do have a long way to go when it comes to arts in the school specifically, and even mm-hmm. in the college atmosphere as well. That can be strengthened immensely. St. Francis is doing a fantastic job, but we can go so much further.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in terms of the pre-K through 12 audience, I know 11 years ago the museum did absolutely no research, no outreach at all. We do 45,000 kids a year in the school system to strengthen the system up. We also had a very, I don't know if anybody's heard of the Scholastics Art and Writing Competition, but it's a 95-year-old national program, the most prestigious in the country, and we were in terrible shape. We have now been in the top five nationally, beating out New York City, Boston, Miami. That's Fort Wayne kids. That's Fort Wayne kids. And it's through changing how art's taught in the school, and it's through working with these kids and working with these teachers. The teachers do a wonderful job. So now that's just a limited segment, though. I mean, that doesn't address everything, but it shows it can be done. Fort Wayne not even being heard of in New York City, now being up in the conference room billboard as a leading example of what you should be doing.
Dan, your thoughts on arts education?
Well, one, to comment off of Charles, the only reason why I'm doing what I'm doing and why I've attempted to do it for as long as I've attempted to do it is because of Scholastics. I got an award my junior year, got a better award my senior year, and then I was like, oh, art. Like, that is a thing that I can think of. My family background does not exactly include art strongly, and so that was a really big way that I could think outside of what I was given, essentially. Sorry, Mom and Dad, I'm not saying that you're bad at that. But I would say, specifically addressing Jonathan, I think he said his name was, within the southeast side of town, I think that there's a lot that could happen. I think that specifically within the population on the southeast side of our town, there are amazing opportunities and an amazing talent that is not being cultivated, and I think that's one of the saddest things that I've found in our city. There's a project that's happening at Wunderkammer right now called Sparks of Promise, and it's a small nonprofit that's basically identifying kids who kind of could use some help and get them involved in the arts as well as other programs, but we're kind of hosting the art side of it. And it's amazing to see a group of children who, by all intents and purposes, essentially society is saying, you're going to have problems, like, systematically because of the amount of poverty and where you come from. And to see what comes out of them is, like, ridiculously awesome. One of the kids is from the Congo, so his family was in refugee status, I assume. Another kid came from, an internment camp from Thailand, and they're doing these amazing things. And That's one of the things. And this is another really long story that cannot be figured out tonight, but the south side of Fort Wayne is where I think we're going to live and die by the success of that part of town as a city.
You know, thank you. South side, absolutely. Big hand for the south side. We just introduced four schools in the south side and some other schools. We identified schools with real problem populations and real bad performance and started a program called Hope Gap. Hope Gap is us reaching out using the New York Scholastic's office to some pretty tough kids from the ghettos in New York and Miami and around. And then we set up what you might call a Skype moment where, like this morning, we had a real tough artist who's come out of trouble, though, and now becomes a successful adult, but has been through everything that anybody could be, you know, go through, talking conversationally to 35 kids at a real tough school here in town. And it gives those kids a chance to see somebody who's like under 25, who's made it, who came through worse than they've been through. But I'll tell you something interesting. After the Skype-like moment, talking on the phone to the guy presenting from Brooklyn, the young guy, he said, "Those kids are the toughest kids I've ever seen. Wow, what a problematic classroom." So it's a multifaceted problem.
We're just about out of time. We'll wrap it up with just this question that we haven't hit on too much. As a non-Fort Wayne resident, I often feel like Allen County residents and arts organizations and artists don't come to other communities too much to present or visit. How do you envision engaging non-Allen County residents?
I travel a lot, and it is, you know, one of my biggest hopes that we are able to be global, and that means global and local, that we both do outreach into other communities and that we bring other communities in. I know that when I worked with Christie's last year, I tried to reach out to a few people here in the Fort Wayne community and make that connection and make it about, you know, how Fort Wayne can really grow in the art scene, and that wasn't embraced so much. Like I said, I think that within the last year, a lot of that has been changing, but we have a little bit of work to do.
Well, and you know, programs like that are wonderful, but they do take money, and we had 3 years of funding from DECO Foundation to hire a person, get a truck, and drive around like Operation Bootstrap and go to the whole top of Indiana, east and west, helping out art organizations, lecturing to artists, teaching people how to make a market, and so on and so forth. But in the third year, the grant stopped, and the grantor had decided that these little places, they didn't want to fund one grant to serve all the places. They wanted every little place to apply to them for $1,600 to have us come and do what we need to do. And they didn't understand, because they're a little bit, you know, too citified maybe, they didn't understand that these places didn't have anybody that could even write a grant to get the $1,600 in the first place, and that they probably couldn't articulate what it was we were going to do for them. Half the time when we got there, they weren't sure what their problems were, but that's why we're there. We don't come to say you have problems. We came to say, do you think there's anything that we could help you with? So we had to abandon the program, unfortunately.
Dan, thoughts on inter-community engagement?
I think that within the work that I do and Wunderkammer Company, it's maybe a little bit different. One, I think that it's definitely being invited in. We usually wait until we understand a space, a group of people, a scenario, and then interact with it instead of trying to kind of like force through the door. And then secondly, funding is always an issue. We are an incredibly small nonprofit. So like our entire expenses last year were $9,600. So I don't think that people recognize that when they see the amount of programming that we do. So just funding is an issue kind of to get there. Mm-hmm. But also I would say just sort of, I guess, institutionally, which is a word that I don't use very often, that we kind of are looking for commonalities programmatically. So, like, we just a couple weekends ago brought a bunch of people up from Indianapolis with a project that we were working on because there were closer ties between what we were doing and what that audience wanted than kind of the area in between. That doesn't mean that we specifically only work with projects that would have more of a large urban audience, but it kind of ends up being that way, that it's a maybe a smaller specific group than a wider net that's cast out throughout the region.
Well, folks, we are just about out of time. A round of hands for our panelists. We've got Jennifer Ford, Dan Schwartz, and Charles Shepherd. Also, thank you so much for coming out. Also, a note, Issues and Ales was produced by Katie Anderson and my hero, Sean Beter. Also, special Yay. Thanks to, thanks, Sean. Our world-class engineer, Ed Didier. Also, thanks to our head honcho, Peter Dominowski, our special events coordinator, Leah Denny, as well as the rest of the WBOI gang. And thank you so, so much to the Phoenix for having us. And thank you so much again for supporting Public Radio. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's all for WBOY Presents. Special thanks to everyone who came out to the Phoenix, to our guests, and to you for tuning in. I'm Sean Beter, and this is 89.1 WBOY Fort Wayne, HD Channel 1.